And hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Glad to be back with you. Sorry we weren't available on yesterday, but we had an important celebration, I guess. Let's talk about celebrations. Aren't celebrations great? Aren't they wonderful? What's the best kind of celebration you could have? Is the best celebration everybody, let's have everybody go to the museum and we'll all look at paintings. That's one. Let's have a bash at my friend's apartment where we'll have drinks and dancing and music and wildness and we'll have a fun time. One or the other. Well, for many of you, you would say, you know, meeting at the museum in a silent way, that could be really beautiful. That could be a bigger celebration than a party. Now, why do I talk about this? Because most people love being primitive. You live in such a world of high intellect, self-control, self-management, that when somehow you get invited to or tricked into something that is primitive, what is primitive? Something that comes naturally from your body. Dance, sex, passion, food, water, things that feel instinctually fabulous. So you create a party, and what do? If you just had a couple of drums there, you know, nice primitive drums, it would be an even better party. I mean, sometimes music is good, but, you know, if you just had a couple of drums and sticks, I mean, that could be just as good, keeping the rhythm going. Because people are attracted to the primitive. It's almost like they're losing sight of themselves when they lose the primitive. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever feel you're just too smart? Do you? So when you want to reach out, you want to be able to find some kind of part of yourself. Oh, hold on just a second. My friends will be right back. Pretty good music in between the two. You know, an interesting thing about music in between the two. In between the two is when you have both a primitive rhythm and a modern conscious kind of sound added to it. You know, there's a lot of new music that is like that electronic sound and so on and so forth. But let's go back to this concept of the primitive. Wouldn't you like to just quit your job, go down to the islands, live on the beach, eat fish, you know, and coconuts. Have a nice island lover. Not think about things. Not worry about things. Not worry about your mother or your children or anything. Doesn't that sound appealing? One would think that eventually we shoot for a place in life which they used to call retirement, which is a word that I think is disappearing from our language. But retirement used to mean, oh, now I'm going to... But you're not. Nobody retires and becomes themselves. They retire, they go down to Florida, they play golf, they have meetings, they eat the right foods, they run, they try to keep themselves healthy and alive. And they'd spend their time running on treadmills. Treadmills is such a funny thing, my friends. Who would run on a treadmill? Well, you run on a treadmill because that's your life, see? But it's a way of connecting to your primitive strength. It's a way of finding the strength in you, the physical strength, which is part of your primitive self. Now, why do I bring this up? Because primitive self seems to be in great kind of primitive can you be? You know, if you're a reptile, and you have the same, we have the same brains that reptiles had, not much of a difference. You know, we've inherited just a little variation on it. But in that reptilian brain, boy, if another reptile comes along who wants to walk into your neighborhood and that reptile has a bigger scale than you do, you know, you want to get rid of it. You want to kill it. You want to destroy it. If it's a female reptile, you don't want her looking in if she's a cute female reptile because she may attract your male reptile. So you want to kill it. Even worse than that, I mean, this is a horrible thing to have seen. I was watching a program about hippopotami. Is that the plural? Hippopotamuses? Hippopotamu. Anyway, I was watching hippopotamus, and hippopotamus kill baby hippopotami. They crush them as soon as they see them. One of the biggest dangers for baby hippopotamus is the male hippopotamus who wants to kill it. And why is he killing it? Because it may become a competitor. Lions, male lions. If the female lion who is new to his brood, if he finds a new female and she comes along, let's say she's divorced, she was fed up with her husband, he was a bum, she goes over, she sees the new lion. She said, hey, Mr. Lion, can we come and be there with you? You could do anything you want. And he says, sure, but when she's not looking, he kills the cubs. Primitive. And we wonder how different we are. Imagine now we see the modern version of this. Somebody gets a divorce. She gets a new husband. She brings her children to the husband. The husband doesn't get along with the children. How come? You know, maybe it's that old hippopotamus stuff. You know, maybe it's hippo lion brain. Maybe his job is to get rid of this kid because she's not his or he's not hers. Possessiveness, another very primitive thing, huh? Now, what am I saying? Am I saying that I think we should be non-primitive? Oh, gosh, no. I mean, I just couldn't imagine it. But what are we supposed to do as humans? As humans, do we have some kind of a job to step up to a better place of consciousness and raise ourselves above the primitive, yet staying in touch with the primitive when we want to be primitive? So you want to be with your husband or your boyfriend in bed, and you want to say, okay, let's now, you know, get wild. And then you get wild, or do you want to have a thinking kind of sexuality? No, you want to abandon your brain and go for it. That seems to be the most fun. Maybe. Maybe not. There's a lot of people who think that using your mind during a thing is worthwhile, that using your mind during sex may be a very good thing. To look at each other in each other's eyes, to heighten the experience. Right? Foreplay is a non-primitive custom. Right? Primitive, they don't, what do they know from foreplay? Right? So here's another concept. But it's more than that. You know, primitive is a condition or quality that affords a return to the roots. It's kind of what the idea of primitivity is. And primitivity is very often associated with religion. In religion, you have both in Muslim, Christianity, forms of Islam, the Amish. What are they all saying to do? Let's go back to traditional values. And what are traditional values? Keep the home safe, you know, have babies naturally, have sex only when it's so, you know, it's like the primitive values are family, and we have to keep family, and we have to deny anything new, modern, or anything that we've learned that says, you know, this may not be the best thing. Spare the rod and spoil the child. It's a kind of primitive belief. The Ten Commandments, they're kind of primitive. You know, do thou shalt not worship any god before me. Why not? We're going to go worship Joe for a day. I remember when I went to Israel, I went to each of the different religions. And I nodded at the Wailing Wall, even though I'm not Jewish. And I touched the bottom of the cross where Christ was buried. And then I went over to the great, great temple of the Islam temple, and I worshiped there. And it was like I found something in each place. Did that turn me away from loving WBAI? No. WBAI is my religion. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. We're talking about something important. We're talking about something important and from a different point of view than you think. I am not saying you should be evolved. I am not saying you should be primitive. But now let's look at this conflict about human emotion and what they call instinct versus intellect. Intellect is the mind's attempt to organize and control a lot of what goes on in the instincts. The mind says, you know, so somebody does something and you get angry at them. And you say, nah, there's a better way of handling them than just getting mad at them. I'll be graceful. So then you have this kind of graceful way of dealing with it, and you could still, you're dealing with your anger. You're not burying your anger, but you're dealing with it successfully. So it's not mind over emotions. Emotions are essential. They're necessary. Instincts are essential. They're necessary. Thinking is essential. It's necessary. You need all three. Without emotions, you have no color to your life. Everything is just like a Mobius strip. You know, it's like you're looking at something and it's just endless. Thinking, 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 and you have no feelings, so there's no color. It's like a black and white life. Feelings are important. They're kind of important to kind of distinguish you from all other people. If you had all mind, you would look like, maybe like Scientology, I don't know enough about it, but you would look like, you know, one place where everybody figures everything out and has an answer for everything. So I want to see it all in there, but I want to take a look and I'm going to show you some different aspects of this that may help you today find your balance between your instinctive self and your involved self, evolved self, and where they run into conflict. You know, there is so much more we know now that we didn't know before. Science, neuroscience, brain imaging, chemistry has taught us things that we never even imagined possible. We just didn't even, who knew about dopamine? Who knew about oxytocin? Oxytocin is not a breath condition. Oxytocin is a hormone that we secrete that when we secrete it, it makes us feel bonded to another person. We feel a bonding. But oxytocin is dependent on quite a few other things like estrogen and so on and so forth. So now when you talk about bonding, and this is just a small example of it, you need oxytocin, right? You need to have this happen. A woman came in to see me today, and she said to me, I don't know what happened. I have this boyfriend. I like him very much, but now I feel nothing towards him. And I said, have you just been through menopause? And she said, yes. And I said, and have you also had any other complications? She said, yes, I had a hysterectomy. I said, so what effect did the change in your hormonal chemistry have on your bonding chemistry? She said, I thought it was all in my mind. She said, I'm here because my boyfriend thinks I'm crazy. And I said, well, maybe you are crazy. Maybe it is in your mind. But can we consider that there may be hormonal things going on inside you that have changed and cut off the bonding chemical? Bonding chemical. Who knew about this? Bonding chemical. There's a thing called G-spot in women. We know about that, right? The G-spot, the great pleasure spot. What's it doing there? The G-spot is located up inside towards the pelvis in a place that doesn't seem like it would have anything to do with sex. The G-spot was built in so that when a baby is being born, as a mother goes through and is about to go through the excruciating pain of childbirth, the G-spot gets passed and triggered and sends off a pleasure chemical that includes lubrication, additional lubrication for the child to go, which is why the highly lubricated G-spot reaction, and it allows for the baby to come through with a sense of bonding for the mother. The mother feels this love for that child when it comes out in this incredible way. Who knew? Let's do a cesarean. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Shall we consider what happens when there's a cesarean versus a G-spot? And cesareans are so common nowadays that there's a If a doctor has a lunch appointment, he's going to do a cesarean because he says he thinks it's better. Bonding. People with autism, right? People with autism have a lack in oxytocin. I've said this all to you before, but I'm bringing it to you because I want to show you some of what we've learned. They have a lack of it. They found a spray that they use to spray the nose of people with autism, and they find out that they're more related to people than they were. We're learning. We're learning. And there's so much more we learn about pleasure and pain, but let's go all the way back in time to the whole concept of an instinct. I hope you're enjoying this today. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays yesterday. On Wednesday, my friend Bernie Starr took a program and had somebody there while I had something to do. That was one. I'd like to hear your reactions to that program, any of you who heard the Wednesday program, because Bernie's cutting his teeth at this. How was it for you? What did you think? How did it feel? And, of course, I'd love your reaction to any of the programs that I do with you, which you can always send me at armand@thepositivemind.com. Let's go back. What is an instinct? An instinct differs from a stimulus in that it arises from sources of stimulation within the body. Right? But we talk about these passions and these instincts and these primitive instincts. Where do they come from? They don't come from the outside. They come from the inside. It operates as a constant force, and it is such that the subject, the person feeling it, cannot escape it by flight, as he can from an external stimulation. You know, if something outside is scaring you, you could run away. Something inside of you is commanding something. You can't run away. There's no place to go. It's inside you. An instinct can be described as having a source, an object, and an aim. Think of three parts to this. The source, the object, and the aim. The source is the state of excitation within the body, and its aim is to remove that excitation. So here we go. Let's think about this. The source is a state of excitation. You have an instinct. I want to eat. Right? You're hungry. Your mind says, I want to eat. You now feel ravenous. Now, I've met many people who, when they get hungry, they start going off the edge. They say, my blood sugar is dropping. They say all kinds of things. Me, I get hungry. I don't care. You know, if I eat, I eat. When I eat, I'm going to eat more than I should have in the first place. So it's okay. I could let it pass. But I don't have that thing inside me. Other people, they feel hungry, but they start losing themselves. Instinct has taken over. What's taking over? A source of excitation. A buzz, a hum, a something, an unrest inside your body. Say, hunger, 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 gotta eat, gotta eat, gotta eat, gotta eat. I mean, gee, what do you do if you don't have any food? You learn to negotiate that. What if you live in India or if you live in Alaska and there's no food? I'm hungry, hungry, hungry. Good enough, you're hungry. That's it. But the mind starts sending off these signals. Now, because we tend to always alleviate these signals, the mind expects immediate gratification. So, like, I have a cat. And when the door is closed, the cat gets on the other side of the door and she screeches. And if I open the door, she comes in. The cat thinks by screeching, the door opens. She doesn't think by screeching she gets me to open the door. She thinks she has the power over this door. She screeches at the door. People have told me they hear her screeching. And when I come home, there's the door closed because she thinks the door should have opened. Well, instinct, when we feed our instinct. So when we have an instinct, for example, for sex, it means that a bunch of excited, you're excited. When you get hot, when you get horny, when you say, I gotta have it, there's an excitement that goes with that. Your brain is buzzing. It takes over your mind. It plays you pictures of eroticism or something, or tenderness or something. Excitement. When you think about even dance, you know, where you think about something that you're dying to have, something, some primitive instinct, jealousy, right? You think about jealousy, it takes over your mind. It needs resolve. It's looking for results. So remember, every instinct has within it an aim and an object. We're going to go to the object. The object is how you're going to get to your aim. If you're hungry, you got to go for food, and your aim is to not be hungry. If it's sex, you got to have sex with somebody, and then you're not going to be sexy. Well, if you find the wrong partner, you're going to be, if you find the right partner, you're going to be more sexy. Right? But eventually, there's a state point. There's a point where you feel satisfied. And when that drive is inside, you're looking to satisfy the primitive drive. How many of you, as I'm speaking, have been prisoners to your own passions? Your drives. They've just kind of, oh. Even the need for safety. Even the need to have someone take care of you. Someone to love you. Someone to embrace you. Someone to hold you. Even loneliness is a primitive instinct. Loneliness is not a bad feeling in itself. Loneliness is a sense of excitation, wishing, claiming to connect. It's a yearning. There's a sense of excitation. When you're lonely, there's something inside you that's saying, please, somebody, phone call, anybody. You go through your phone book and you start trying to call people and nobody's home, and then you start at the A's, and by the time you get to Zelda, you know, you've probably spent so much energy that you've exhausted the excitability of the instinct to connect. And then you say to yourself, I don't need anybody. See? Because you've gone through it. You've gone through the excitation. So a concept or primitive instincts are based on an agitation, an energy stimulus to the brain that is dying to be fed. And it imagines a way that it gets fed based on your history. It replays all your tapes. Whenever we've had this excitation, like this, what do we need? And you run it through your brain. I'm feeling crazy. I feel hungry. I feel hungry. What do I want? Pasta. You know, why pasta? Ooh, pasta. Chocolate. You know. Something pops in your brain as to what is going to satisfy those needs. Life can be perceived as largely dealing with excitations based on primitive instincts and the need for their gratification. And then it seems to be that since we know we can't gratify any wish in our evolved brain, if you're walking down the street and you feel sexual, you're not going to pick up a stranger. I mean, you're trying not to do that in your life anymore. Or if you're feeling hungry, you're trying not to eat junk food. You're trying to control it because you don't like what's happening to your body. You know, if you get scared by lightning, you're trying to stop yourself from running for shelter just because it's lightning or a loud sound. Life is about trying to minimize the conflict of the excitation of the need, of this instinctual need, with its gratification. That's what a diet is. And it seems largely about dealing with these conflicts, seeking to maximize gratification and minimizing guilt and the punishment that may come with it. So you want to get what you want to get, and you still want to get it, but you don't necessarily want to suffer through the either having too much guilt, for example, by satisfying and feeling guilty, by eating pasta and then getting fat, or by, you know, whatever it is that you're going to do, you try to minimize the guilt. All right, I'll eat, instead of pasta, I'll have something healthier, I'll have some udon noodles, you know. And you make deals with yourself over this. And you still get the need satisfied, but you don't feel the punishment or the guilt. So these are some of them. This is interesting stuff, isn't it, friends? Now, we're going to go a little further. We're going to go much further with this today, by the way, because I think this is a lesson really, really worth learning. I want to talk about Eros as an instinct. Eros, which we consider to be love, seems to be an instinct that is based on libido, which is sexual instinct, right? Plus the need to form a family, the need to procreate, the need to perpetuate our species. You understand? There's a deal inside you. There's a DNA. There's a little chip inside you that says have babies. That's what it says to women. It says have babies before you're 50, it says. Right? And then it says to the men, have sex with your wife and everybody you can. Because whatever seed you got left, you got to spread it all around. And they give those men till 100. So when do men cheat? Between 50 and 100. I'm only kidding. All right, let's see. So this love instinct seems as basic as health, safety, and sustenance. And it happens through sexual drive as well. The positive emotions of love, the social behavior of getting nice with people and being with people, it's all about that instinct. Socializing, having people around you, having people be friends of yours. You know, it's all about instinct. It's all about finding a safe community. You haven't done much different than living, you know, trying to find a tribe. But now, you know, you wear nice clothing. You go to nice places. You hope to meet better people. But it's about gathering a tribe, cooperation, collaboration, harmonious societies. This is all Eros. Love, marriage, culture, gathering, all of the stuff that we do is about feeding that instinct in another form. Just trying to find a way to do that. Now, it's a funny thing about our instincts. On the other side of every instinct is a negative instinct. It's like a balance. Freud called it Thanatos. He called it the death drive, Mortido. He said, in opposition and balance to Eros, which is growth and development and everything else, we have another side of us that pushes us towards our own extinction. And that includes aggression. It includes hurting yourself in so many different ways. So he says, just as there are instincts to get you to survive, there are instincts to get you to limit your life. Thanatos is associated with negative emotions such as fear, hate, and anger. And he believes these go right along with the instincts. Whenever you have an instinct, you also have fear, hate, anger, antisocial versus social acts. You know, everything from bullying to murder. He goes beyond this to say that in this negative side of us, which is part of our instinctual balance, we have things like rejection, repetition, and fixation, which I'm going to talk to you about. You got to learn about these. You're going to see them all in yourself. And by the time we get done, you'll be a perfectly balanced person. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. It's so much to learn about, and there's so much to learn about, my friends, that it's really beautiful. I have here today, assisting me in the studio, Claudia Fox. Claudia, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you, Armand.
We have a program you're going to be doing with us very soon, in 2 weeks, I think. And I'm going to take a short break, my friends. When I do, when I come back, I'm going to play a very dramatic piece about the struggle that we have inside us, and then I'll continue with you. Be back in a minute.
Find love, you and I. It's a new game to play. Then we tell our first lie and see love go away. And we find we're alone. We rush on, you and I. We don't need love at all. We need thrills, we need speed. Then we stumble and fall. And we find we're alone. We're loyal, you and I, to flowers that are dead. We forget how to cry. We save photos instead. And we find we're alone.
and I, we ask what is that? Then we open the Times, we're informed where it's at. And we find we're alone. We're moral, you and I, we stand for what's right. We slaughter all evil by God's early light. And we find we're alone. We're lucky, you and I, we're alive and secure, but in a bank and the church we can never feel sure. And we find we're alone. We've made it, you and I, we have glory and fame, yet we never know why we feel so ashamed. And we find we're alone. We have power, you and I, but what good is that now? We would build a new world if we only knew how. And we find we're alone. We are old, you and I. We beg warmth from the sun. In the dreams that we dream, we ask, what have we done? And we find we're alone.
And that's from Jacques Brel. Is alive and well, Sean Elliott. We find we're alone. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about things that drive you inside yourself, my friends, and things that you never even know that drive you. You just can't tell. You know, if you're having a premenstrual day, is anything good? You know, I mean, so then what do your instincts say? So sometimes, can you step out of that brain? There are things about hormones and pressures. Now, I've felt it myself. I get in an aggressive mood, and if I'm in an aggressive mood, nothing is going to take that mood away from me. People say to me, be conscious, you're acting too aggressive. And I would say, no, I'm not. Leave me alone. I'm just being who I am. I've been that way. Have you been that way? And now the same thing happens, especially around some of these brain functions, hormonal brain functions. When the hormone dictates, you become stupid. And by stupid, I mean you believe that what you're saying is real because it comes from your feelings. And I've seen that wreck so many marriages, so many relationships. The non-consciousness of the man who is finding some, on some level, his testosterone is dropping and he's not aware of himself, so he suddenly goes running out trying to have affairs, trying to stop himself from aging, where consciousness might help him at the moment. The woman who's either going through menopause or premenstrual or syndrome or something like that, where the consciousness is just gone. It's out of your mind. No, this is real. Well, this interesting conflict here, one wonders why would we have the inability to grab ourselves when we get into a primal mood? What stops us? Well, here's what I think. This is the thing I was talking about, Thanatos. If you just tuned in, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about the basic instincts that we have, how the need to feel those instincts is trying to be balanced with an evolved brain. Does it mean denial of the instincts? No. It means gratifying whatever your needs are at the most minimal cost. So now here, let me just go a step further. Thanatos itself, now this is what Freud speculated, and you know, Freud made mistakes. I mean, one of Freud's big mistakes, for example, was to believe that we are always searching for homeostasis, that we're looking to be in balance. He was a neurologist. And it turns out in the further examination years later that they said, no, 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 no. when the nervous system is in balance, it's dying. If it's steady and calm, it's dying. No, it needs an excitatory potential. And they have a word called excitatory potential. The nerves have to be ready to fire. That's their ideal state. Not gone to sleep. When they go to sleep, you die. So Freud's belief was that we're all searching for balance. And it was wrong. Mistake. This doesn't seem to be a mistake. This seems to be a key, a door. The Thanatos instinct. Thanatos is associated with negative emotions such as fear, hate, and anger, which lead us to some actual antisocial acts. And among this now, we're going to talk about repetition. Did you ever notice that when we have a strong drive to repeat things, even to the point where those things are harmful to us, you ask yourself, we used to call it an obsessional compulsive obsessive-compulsive disorder. You find the same boyfriend over and over again. You find yourself in the same situation over and over again. You find yourself in the same place over and over again. You eat the same food over and over again. You do the same things over and over again. Where does this come from? Why is it when a baby is not feeling good, if you rock it, it goes to sleep? So rocking and traumatized adults, when an adult gets traumatized, what do? They crawl into a fetal position as if they are babies. They crawl into that spot. That's the way. Generally, if you're feeling traumatized, you don't lay on your back. You know, you crawl up. Repetition seems to be one of the things that we look to do over and over again. And the trouble is, as we repeat our behaviors based on some instinct inside of us that says you have to be safe, so you repeatedly lock a door. You have to have sex, so you repeatedly go out looking for somebody. You have to eat, so you're repeatedly going to the stores to gratify it. You're not thinking, no, I won't gratify it, or I'll find some other way. And what we do is we find repetitions of behaviors. And some of these repetitions of behaviors, remember, we need three things here. We need the excitatory potential, right? We need that beginning thing, the stimulus. Then we need an object, and then we need an aim. So when we have an excitement, we're looking for how we're going to gratify it, which is the aim, is gratify it. But in the middle, we pick an object. I'm going to have sex with Tony. I'm going to have sex with that lady who lives downstairs. I'll just satisfy that need. And then what happens is little by little, you find you could be less discriminatory in who you choose. Because Tony wasn't home, but his cousin was staying over. You know what I mean? All right, so I don't know his name. Whatever his name was. And as we become less discriminatory, our instincts become more and more demanding. That's why many of you find you can't stop those drives. That's why many of you find that food control is so hard, because you use less and less to satisfy it. You use less, you know, all right, I guess I'll eat pizza. You know, pizza wasn't here so much 50 years ago. Now it's everywhere. Why? Because it's feeding the instinctual drive, immediate gratification, satisfy it now, kind of thing that people have developed. So now, if we look at this and we think about this, this is now we're talking about that, then we have fixation. This is a particular effort that leads to repetition, where the person is unable to remove their attention from something or someone. When your mind gets caught somewhere and it can't go anywhere, again, it's being based on an energy on the inside that is looking for resolution. And one of the things it does, it looks for resolution by repeating in your mind a thought. That's called repetition. And fixation is a place you can't get your mind off. Now, by defining these drives, we're kind of looking at this dualistically. We're saying Eros, one side of us, life, breath, instinct, develop, procreate, find a family. That's one instinct. And on the other side, thanatos, hate, fear, anger. The suggestion here is that when you're unconscious to all of it, they all go together. And how do we know that? They can interact and turn into each other. Love and hate often go together, right? Crying and laughter go together. The opposites seem to pop up at the same time when you would never understand it. Well, you say to yourself, how did this happen? I mean, even in the other side of it, you think about eating. Eating preserves life, but it destroys what you're eating. It destroys the life of what you're eating. Dualistic. So perhaps repetition is due to drives that are only partially satisfied. So it's important, one of the things we say, that is, the theory is, well, the reason why people do repeated things is because they never get satisfied. Because the repetitious thoughts, the repetitious compulsive behaviors don't really satisfy, because they can't. Or maybe when an action fails to fully satisfy, the resulting frustration and indignity increases tension to the point where we seek the nearest potential gratification, i.e., you call up somebody, you want to be with them. They can't be on the phone. They can't talk to you, right? They can't be there. They're too busy for you. You're feeling like you want to connect with them. You're not challenging yourself. You're not asking yourself, what's going on inside me? Where's all this energy coming from? Because, you know, it doesn't take very much to calm these energies down with consciousness or Xanax, you know, one or the other. But what you generally do is you generally will say to yourself, I've got to have it fed. And when it doesn't get fed right next to you where you want it, you feed it where it's available. And that's why you pick up some guy who you don't know or some gal you don't know for just kind of gratification, or talk to people you don't even want to talk to on the phone, because you're looking to get the need gratified by the nearest potential gratification. And then this drives you to repeat it with less discrimination and less discrimination and less discrimination, and you wind up being indiscriminate in the way you gratify your needs. You find friends who you don't want to have as friends. You find people, you find yourself being around people you don't want to be around. You find yourself talking to people you don't want to talk to because you're trying to meet those needs. What's the answer to it? Yes, I am tired of being civilized. Yes, I'm tired of my poor brain. Reason. How disgusting. Self-control. Oh, my gosh. Consciousness. Oh, why can't I? You know the beauty of taking drugs? Give it all up. Cocaine. Absolutely, cocaine is, and I'm saying I really disagree with taking it, but cocaine has this wonderful property. It eliminates all guilt. It gives you no guilt. You become a psychopath. You take cocaine and you have no guilt. So now you're free of guilt, and that's why cocaine people are so aggressive. PCP, angel dust, also same thing. Same kind of thing. Marijuana. It takes away the part of your mind that wants to control the instincts. You lay around and you just, you know, oh, I can do anything I want. I'll just pleasure myself. I'll invite somebody over. What's your name? It doesn't matter. Come on over. Take it easy. We'll go dancing. We'll go music. It just drops you into a primitive zone with no mental controls. You lose your mind. There's even an expression that people have with sex, screw your brains out. You know? Oh, I wanted to screw my brains out. Yes, absolutely. You want to get rid of your mind. And you're hoping through passion, through sex, that'll happen to you. But it's little wonder that we're at this point, because here we are, my friends, we're stuck. We are the humans who are going to make the difference. We're either going to evolve ourselves, we're going to take a step from here and go up a level, or we're going to stay primitive. Now, primitive is not as in primitive culture. Primitive cultures, that's one thing. They're very evolved, many of them. I mean, there are islands where people are very evolved and very controlling and very discriminating and very fine. That's not primitive. Primitive is basically feeding your instincts in one form or another, thinking that they're intellectual choices and not doing anything. You must learn about yourself. You have to learn about your chemistry. You have to stop feeding your chemical impulses without questioning them. There's a way to do it. Learn. Learn about hormones. Learn about neurotransmitters. Learn about it. Learn about the relationship between joy and envy. And they just found in the brain that when the human voice, that there is a connection between the two parts of our brain that feel joy and envy. Envy. The people who feel the most joy feel the most envy. How did I know that? How do we know that? How do I get that information? Well, I get information all the time. You can, too. I mean, you could, of course, listen to the W2, the Positive Mind, and get all your information, but you could research it. People with post-traumatic stress disorder have less skin sensation than people who don't have post-traumatic stress disorder. Did we know that? How do we know that? You know, it seems that there's a bunch of stuff. Our sense of touch, which is a program I should do with you, is kind of so important. And we have no idea how much our sense of touch affects us, or a sense of smell. Do you know how much romance is based on smell? Do you know that the one tool the instincts gave you, when the instincts come up, the first thing they do is sharpen your nose? Why? If you're going to eat, smell it. See if you want to eat it. If it smells bad, you don't eat it, unless it's cheese, right? I mean, unless it's a known bad smell. So smell becomes tremendously important. And how does that work? The way smell works is amazing. It breaks things down into these micromolecules, these tiny little things that go fishing through your nose and up into your brain, and they seek out little cells to be familiar with. I remember I used to be obsessed with Shalimar perfume. In fact, I think I'm still obsessed with it. If anybody wears it, I'm a pushover. And I couldn't figure out what it was. If it was on a subway and somebody had Shalimar on, I was bringing myself over there, right? And it turned out the connection it made was with, believe it or not, orange cake. Cake made with orange and vanilla. Now, why would that attract me? Because when I was a kid, one of the goodies we had baked in the house was orange cake. And the smell of orange cake meant everything was okay. Everybody's at peace. There's a cake being cooked. So this smell mechanism sent these molecules into my brain, and my brain hooked up an association with something. And good Lord, I could have married somebody for orange cake. But knowing yourself is really terrific. Asking yourself questions. What is it about me? What is it about me? And then the other side of it is, friends, don't let them enslave you. Don't let your need to get out of your loneliness, don't let it dominate your behaviors. Don't let your need to avoid pain make you stay in a relationship that's a horrendous relationship. Don't do it. Make your breaks. Do what you have to do. Find yourself, because here's what we're doing. We are going to be the next generation, and we are going to be the teachers of the next generation. You may not have babies to pass it on to, but when you evolve, you become part of a society that is an evolving society. And this evolving society teaches other people to perform in an evolved way. I think that's a wonderful thing. I think we have a chance here to make such a major difference, to not be a part of the whole thing, not to get be scared by orange alerts that are thrown up to scare you and manipulate you, not to say, oh, we're going into a depression and scares you all into selling your stocks cheap to somebody who's laughing at us. But not to be just sent into it. You go to buy something, and it's the last one. You got to buy this one, and if you don't take it, somebody else is going to take it for sure, right? And, you know, you get the instincts. They go for your instincts. They grab at your instincts, and they say, come on, you got to do this. When you own yourself, you are not angry at people who do that. You understand it. They are living in the primitive brain. They are learning to dress up a certain way so that they could seduce you, so they could get you to behave their ways, and you understand it. And you look at them, and you smile. You say, it's okay. I don't have to give in. I could see you, and I could see the part of you that is stuck in that primitive place. Now, of course, this is all well and good unless you're in love with somebody who is constantly in that primitive place. It gets very tough. Because then as you love them, and you try to love them, you find that they're fighting consciousness all the time. Well, I say to you, if you're stuck in a relationship with somebody who is stuck in that primitive place, then it's your primitive brain that's stuck there. Because there's another part of you that would love them and wish them well and say, if you can't join me, I think I'll go elsewhere. And elsewhere doesn't mean running to somebody else. It may just mean finding a different place to be. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. In the following weeks, we have a number of programs coming up for you, which I want to tell you about tomorrow. We have a very special program, somebody speaking about menopause, I believe. Then we have Claudia Fox, who's going to talk about keys of success. Lillian Gonzalez is going to be talking about teenage stuff. Jeremy Spiegel, a psychiatrist. Deborah King is doing an interview. Skates, who is a multiple personality who calls in, has actually came in the studio. We made a program together. You'll hear about multiplicity from a really interesting point of view. It's really beautiful. Eric Morganow is going to be with us. Dieter Mittelstein-Scheid, I think the most evolved man in the world, is going to be with us for a program. Interviews on male sexuality and other things, psychomotor therapy. All of these are coming up planned. We're going to have them over the next few weeks. I'm going to try to get them up on our website, exactly what's happening on what day. But that takes another evolved self to do it, and I'm working at it, my friends. I'm trying to get that evolving going. I want to get as much of this while I'm still here and teaching. And I want to thank all of you for being a part of this education in this world that we live in. I'm going to end today's program with something very special. I want to bring you a calm spot, a spot an old friend of mine, Tony Scott, musician, made some music for Zen meditation, and he made one very pretty piece. So for as long as we could afford to have it on the air, I'd like to play this, which is called After the Snow, the Fragrance. It's a beautiful concept. So I'll be back with you, my friends, tomorrow at 1 p.m. And my special thanks to everybody around. I'll be back with you then, my friends. Love to you all. Bye-bye.